The following is a fourth-hand production.
Buckle up, kiddos, as we do an entire episode on a book that no one can read, and we don't mean Twilight. We're talking the Voynich manuscript. Adam Poston and Tak Van Sickle from the Twisted Ten join in to help us get to the bottom of this. Oh, and Pecker is here too. So if you dig illustrated codexes handwritten on skin in an unknown writing system that dates back to the 1400s, you're in luck. Sit back, fire up your Enigma machines, and break out your decoder rings because it's time for Hysteria 51.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in Hysteria Nation to the podcast that loves to trade recipes, but only does it in indecipherable codes, ciphers, and languages. This is Hysteria 51. Broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago, we are your hosts and head translators, John Goforth and Brent Hand.
そしてテーブルの上にはサントリーウイスキーがあります。わかりますね？感情を込めてゆっくりとカメラを見て優しく、そしてあなたの古い友達に会うように言ってください。カサブランカのボギーのように君の瞳に乾杯。サントリータイム。
He wants you to turn, look in camera.
That's all he said?
Yes.
Refreshing topic this week, John, the Voynich manuscript, which I'm going to mess that name up all week, right before
repeatedly.
The Von Jakob, I don't even know.
That's a winery in Southern Illinois, thank you.
We might not know what it says, who wrote it, or what it's for, but we know for a fact it does exist. Quite a departure from the norm for us, actually.
It feels good, Brent. It just feels good. And as we sit here and record this, new evidence has supposedly surfaced that could help shed light into the meaning of the manuscript. I mean, this thing broke literally yesterday. And that's what they call in the business a tease.
Nicely done. I might actually stay until the end of this one instead of just phoning it in like I'm used to.
Ugh, please don't.
That other voice you're hearing is the other host of this show.
Host. That's generous.
It is generous. His name is Conspiracy Bot.
C-Bot is a robot I cooked up in my lab to do the show's editing and research. And instead, he just drinks a lot and has anger issues.
Ah,
it's kind of like everyone's stepdad.
Like father, like son.
Yeah, right.
Screw you.
I think I might hit a little close to home there, Brent. C-Bot, now that the comedy career seems to be fizzling out, what have you been up to occupy your time?
Little of this, little of that, really weighing my options before I jump toaster into my next venture. Oh, and there's new neighbors up the street, so terrorizing them with broken windows, dead animal carcasses, and air horns in the middle of the night. You know, the usual.
If he's going to keep using those plunger feet to get up and down the stairs, John, I think I actually need to lock the doors at night. Before he incriminates himself or any of us further, let's actually get to our guests, of which there are many.
There are many. And boy, is it a lineup. First, the returning guest who is always never welcome back.
Pecker.
His name is Pecker.
Joe Peck. Welcome, Joseph.
Pleasure. A pleasure, gentlemen.
It is.
For you and you alone.
It is so good to see you. It feels like it's been forever and a day.
It really does.
No, it does not. It feels like it's too short. He's always here. He's omnipresent.
He's moving into my basement.
He hasn't
I'm
already?
Mrs. Musk when he's not here. What can I say?
Ugh.
Also joining the show via the interwebs are the co-hosts of our favorite podcast based in Southern Florida, hosted by employees of space agencies. Second favorite South Florida space agency based podcast, I think is the best way to say it.
Okay. Okay.
You know,
we're the second best at a lot.
We're being safe.
Yeah.
Adam and Tak of the Twisted Ten and Living Podcariously. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks. Charmed, I'm sure.
Thank you very, very much for having us.
From sunny, sunny Florida where it's not snowing. So
what is that word? say snails. I don't know what
snails.
That is.
We have snails.
It's what the flyover states, as they call it, get between you and
So, fellas, last time you were on, we had one of our more infamous episodes, our Flat Earth Roundtable.
That's a fun one.
That was fun.
We're still getting death threats over that one.
Oh, my God. Our YouTube got... I had to turn off comments on YouTube because we were getting literally, all turning aside, people saying they were going to... We should kill ourselves. They were going to kill us, get with the program, calling us Freemasons, everything.
Well, I mean, that part's true, but everything else sucked.
Pretty much because I went afterwards and told David Weiss he was an idiot and got in arguments with him online. Because who doesn't like kicking that dead horse, you know? So it was a lot of fun.
Oh, for sure. Like, we had them also on our show, Twisted 10, as well. And also, we're on a YouTube channel, too, that we put that on. And there's all kinds of comments in there. It's ridiculous. It's a great time. It's a good time to read. It's a good read.
It's very sad when our most popular episode features those goofballs. Now, listen, I like them both. They were nice enough gentlemen to us, and we were happy that they came on and got us 20,000 for one episode. But, you know, it's rough that that's what's more popular than anything that we've ever produced individually.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But sometimes, guys, isn't it more about quality than quantity? Let's be honest.
Listen to the artist over there.
Well, I'm proud about what I do, and I don't need numbers.
Well, listen, no, I'm not going that far. But I mean, there is a line at some point when you got guys and they're talking about. Well, I mean, I can't see any further than the end of my nose, so obviously the earth is flat.
I don't know. I've become woke since then, and that passes my smell test.
End of the 3 hours, I was just doing shots. I didn't know what else to do. But luckily, gentlemen, all of us are normal-ish, and we have a great topic to talk about tonight, the Voynich manuscript.
Yeah. Something that, like you said, actually exists, is actually actively in the news right now. And I think, was it Tack? Was it your idea, Adam? I don't know who was saying, we want this as our topic.
Yeah, that was me. When you suggested it, I was like, oh, hell yeah, I'm good for that. I know a little bit about that.
He's just hoping it's like Middle Ages erotica. So his fingers are...
So for the kids at home that don't know what we're talking about, we are talking about a book. I know. Everybody don't get all excited.
Really excited. A book.
Don't everybody get all excited at once. So why would we do an entire episode on a book?
I still don't know. And I
fear not, dear listener. It's not just any book. It's actually a bound manuscript of unknown origin in a language that no one can identify.
Allegedly. I'm pretty sure that the Illuminati and the reptilians, they have that on their end table. That's just, you know, their go-to.
Reptilians can read it. Yeah, it's a fact.
It's a fact.
Well, considering they wrote it, I'm sure they can, but we'll get there.
Reptile wins.
It's a book. It's not a normal book, though. The pages are made of vellum, which is what you call it when it's made of calf skin.
What do you call it when it's made of meat sack skin? Asking for a friend.
I think that's the Necronomicon, right?
God, I love C-Bot.
I hate it when he asks questions like that.
Yeah. So some of the pages of this manuscript are missing, but they're still around like 240 pages. Some of them are foldable sheets. And if you're feeling sassy, you can look up William Shatner and this Voynich manuscript.
Voynich.
I told you, I'm bad with it. Voynich.
Wait a minute.
You could see him like playing with a fake one going, oh, you should see what I'm looking at here. He has a whole like 20-minute YouTube from his old weird, wacky, wild world or whatever the hell it was done on this. And it is.
What did you say, Joe? It was his answer to Nimoy's
In Search Of?
In Search Of.
He had to get in on that too. Yeah. For sure.
On that paranormal bandwagon of cash that we cash in on every, you know, weekend.
Make hundreds of pennies on.
I've been told that we're part of the problem, you know, and just, you know, part of the machine, but I'm still not getting any of that machine money.
So. Oh, I mean, whoever's complaining about that clearly aren't like you guys where you're making no less than some money off this.
That's true.
Yes.
Now, we're not making South Florida space money, but, you know, it's okay. It's okay.
Oh, you stop.
So the text written from left to right, which actually matters because, you know, a lot of them are from right to left, is arranged in short paragraphs. And the manuscript is so heavily illustrated. And from these illustrations, it appears to be scientific or medical work from the Middle Ages. There's illustrations of similar type or mostly grouped together in the manuscript, and you can almost identify sections based on said illustrations.
Now, and obviously a few of these things are supposition, saying it's written from left to right. Since they don't know what's written, they can't say for certain that it's written from left to right.
It looks like it is.
But it looks like it is. Right. And the illustrations are of similar type because there's what looks like plants all in one area.
So they call that, there's an herbal section with drawings of herbs, some of which look realistic, others appeal imaginary, but the problem is none of them are actually real plants that we can identify from here on Earth. I'll throw that out there.
But some look similar.
Some
look similar. Many don't.
If I was to draw a manuscript, and I'm going to go as far as to say probably tack, you would not be able to tell what the hell I was. Is that a pot leaf? No, man, it's a rose. I had no idea. That's the end of my, if you need an evil robot, I'm your guy. If you need a drawing of a plant, keep looking.
So you're saying you are not the originator of the Voynich manuscript?
I'm not saying that out loud, but it's probably.
Okay.
Probably.
That's okay. So the next section was an astronomical section. There's illustrations of the sun, the moon, and the stars, and there are actual almost recognizable zodiac symbols. It's one of the few things in the entire manuscript that they think they actually recognize.
Yeah, but it's almost as if, like, some people you talk to them, it's like it's viewed from another star, like the Pleiades.
Another vantage point.
And so everything shifted a little bit, but they still think it's the zodiac symbols. I'm coming. I'm trying real hard for this alien angle on this one, so bear with me.
I'm trying real hard.
Oh, nice.
You damn right.
Yes, trying to be a shepherd. A cosmological section is up next with mostly circular drawings.
Is that like beautician school? Is that what that means?
That's exactly what it is. They're circular drawings because they're mostly bouffants.
My favorite.
A few beehives.
My favorite hair to this day, it stands up.
It does. It's the test of time, if you will.
Not to be confused with Conway Twitty's pompadour, which was beautifully coiffed in and of itself.
Conway Twitty.
I just doubled the Conway Twitty on the internet.
On the internet.
There's also a so-called biological section which contains some possibly anatomical drawings with small humans, mostly feminine figures, probably systems of tubes transporting liquids, mostly green, and a lot of these women look pregnant, at least they do to me, in the pictures.
Slide them in, let them bake now. Slide them in, slide them out, easy bake. Wow!
Let's talk about this. Let's pause here for a moment. Guys, guests, have you seen these drawings?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, I've seen them a lot. I mean,
he's seen them a lot, yeah.
When he says a lot, he says a lot.
Last Tuesday, last Thursday, twice on Sunday.
I study them really hard, like at night.
The tubes. I. What would you describe those tubes as?
Middle-aged water park. I mean,
that's what I thought. Water slides.
Yeah, except it's green water. But so, Adam, did you see? Looking at these, like, did they look like they were pregnant, or is that just me? Like the women in these pictures.
Well, a lot of them did, but you also have to take into consideration what was sexy at the time for when this was supposed to be written. Looks a little different than what we conventionally think
people
of sexy
would have
now.
Seen me
but
at that time, have been like that bastard is rich.
However, I know what the green is.
Fat. Yeah,
the green liquid is the Surge Cola. By the way, that's like a Surge soda. Just it's the origination of Surge. Yeah, that's where it came from.
That makes sense. It's just the first Surge commercial. They're all just Surge.
You got it.
Gross. Just a bunch of naked. My baby needs Surge.
Plants Like It. Wait, that's the different one.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That's right. What is that? That was, It's Got What Plants Need, I forget. From
So could the Voynich manuscript have been a 200-something, 240-page tourism pamphlet?
Well, I thought it was a business plan for opening the first water park.
Water park, right, right.
We so
here's the plants, and how we're going to make chicks. It beautiful. Yeah, the women are going to flock like the salmon of Capistrano.
What? It's going to be open at night. All right, so they can see the stars. I think you might be onto something.
And by stars, you mean stars such as Troy McClure, right?
Yes.
You know me.
I'm Troy McClure.
Slides as.
Six Flags Over Venice and Six Flags Atlantis.
Oh, Atlantis.
And Hal Voynich's outfit in Europe.
There's also a pharmaceutical section, or so-called, because it has drawings of containers.
The only way you're going to enjoy this water park is if you have some pharmaceuticals. Right.
Next to which various small parts of these herbs, leaves, and roots have been aligned. And they think a recipe section, which contains over 300 short paragraphs, each accompanied by the star on the left margin, meaning they think that's like a
Michelin star?
Yes, exactly. A new recipe, though a lot of people are like, you don't understand, this is just like with Nostradamus, and those are new quatrains that we just haven't deciphered yet. So
another possibility, it's a farmer's almanac.
Yeah, just a really old.
Really long, really old, odd farmer's almanac.
Well, an alien farmer's almanac, well, right, Brent? Like, the stars are where they're basically saying, like, here is the next human recipe. I mean, recipe.
Yes. You can actually get a copy of this Voynich manuscript if you go to Stuart Swardlow's homepage. Stuart Swardlow and his human wife will sell you an actually transcribed into whatever language you want a copy for a nominal fee.
Reptile wins. Fatality.
really could be a farmer's almanac from back then. A lot of folks actually think that. The problem is no one can read it. And it's really kind of strange that no one to this day can. I mean, right. with the amount of languages that we've been able to decipher and figure out,
and it's not just
one's
like,
based on another and so on and so forth.
And the thing that we want you to understand, it's not like this was found, like some conspiracy theorist opened his door and it was there on microfiche. No, this was found in like, this is at Yale, and this has been studied by the NSA, by code breakers who had broke the Enigma machine's codes in World War II, World War I.
This
code
was
breakers.
Studied by Joe Peck.
Yes, exactly.
Nonetheless.
Yeah.
And your findings, sir?
Well, we'll get to that. Like, if I told you that now, the show would be over.
Oh, good time.
There's a process here.
Sorry, there's a process. That's right. Okay.
So he's not going to give you the milk for free. I mean, come on.
Oh, he is.
What's so strange about it, it leads researchers to think that it might not be simply a translation problem. It's not just some language we haven't come up with. So some thoughts of what it could be was, well, like a long extinct language.
So it's not based on another one. It went extinct a long time ago.
And to put that in perspective, the Eskimos people, the Inuit people, lost the language in like 2009 or something, like the last native speaker. There are upwards of 500 languages on Earth that are almost extinct, and tens of thousands that we've lost in recorded history. So think about all the ones that we don't know about.
Esperanto?
Esperanto, thriving, and now has native speakers.
Thriving?
Esperanto.
What a great word to describe it. Thriving.
So what's funny, Lisa and I just watched a documentary on Esperanto, and they actually
The one joke I make.
No.
The one joke I make.
Swear to God. So they have over...
He watched a documentary on it.
They have over 1,000 native speakers of Esperanto. He's giving you a look like, I don't know what I'm talking about. It's, if you guys don't know what Esperanto is, it's
no,
like
we can't believe you
Klingon.
Watched a documentary
yeah,
on
that's
it.
That's the look I'm giving it. This is unbelievable what we're witnessing
amazing,
right now.
Amazing. The history of Esperanto. It was actually this guy who collects like antiquities of like sci-fi and stuff like that. Is one of the guys who like keeps Esperanto going.
Esperanto was supposed to cause world peace. I mean, this was supposed
well,
to...
Well, we're fingers crossed, John.
And where exactly is this happening?
I'm trying to include Adam. He speaks Esperanto. So.
Adam, say yeah, something. Say something.
It goes something like, you know, look. Yeah, something like that, right?
Lots of clicks and things, yeah.
Yeah, lots of clicks.
In that regard, though, like... we have all these evidence, all this evidence of like languages die, right? You gave the Inuit example, like the Basque language will die within the next like 10 years or something as less personalized. Yes. Has anyone that's alive right now witnessed the birth of a language?
Klingon.
Tolkien. Tolkien also, J.R.R. Tolkien.
Tolkien.
They didn't go the whole way with Elven or Elvish or whatever like they did with Klingon, though I'm sure they will if they haven't already.
What, like a dictionary?
Yeah, like to where they've actually worked out like conjugation of verbs and stuff like that, which is crazy.
Ebonics also, I think, is another one. Yeah, no?
What was that?
Oh.
Ebonics, is that another one?
Yeah, right.
True.
That's true.
So if it's not an extinct language, it could be a code or a cipher.
That's right. That's the one that a lot of people lean to. Like, well, it's a foreign language that is channeled through a cipher, so it's really hard. Or it's absolute nonsense, which there are a lot of people that think it's formulated absolute nonsense. So it's not like someone just sitting down and writing gibberish. They wrote gibberish intelligently, which is actually, they said, very hard to do.
And to be distinguished from that, it could be the ravings of a mad mind, which is distinguishable from that, meaning the person who sat down thought they were actually writing in a language, but they had broken wires in their brain, and so it translated out differently. Yeah.
That's amazing.
True. Then we got the two that I have to touch on, because otherwise we're, you know, go kicking and screaming.
I'll let you, because, you know, we don't judge.
Yeah. It could be.
What are you talking
people
about?
People from another.
That's all we do.
People from another dimension or a language from another planet. Now, not to say that that is the original, but someone here on Earth made a copy of it. Or maybe it was from Atlantis some of the stayovers wrote it, and those are the leftovers. I think that wraps up this episode.
Done.
Yes.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
it's been a blast.
Fun. Joe, good seeing you again.
What a pleasure.
We know kind of what it is now. John, why don't you give us a little history on it, of what the actual thing, where it came from, and why we're actually talking about it.
Obviously, the exact origin of the manuscript is not known. But the prevailing theory is it originated in northern Italy during the Italian Renaissance. So basically the early 15th century.
Yeah, they date it like 1408 to 1419 or something. It's pretty – they've narrowed it down.
And the way they're able to do that is the vellum we mentioned earlier, they carbon dated it. The only challenge with that is that vellum is a lot like a painter's canvas.
Yeah.
It's really, especially back then, valuable. And so if you didn't like what was written on it, you just kind of washed it off and started over.
Yeah. Once it dried, you could pick it off even and start over. Yeah. Like it was very desirable.
So while we know the vellum is from then, we don't know that the content that was written on is from then. Also, I will point out, I was watching Ancient Aliens the other night. And your friend and mine, Mr. George Tsoukalos, spent an hour proving that anything carbon dated near a nuclear explosion is likely off by 10,000 years. So this could actually be from the distant past or from the future.
If any object is exposed to some type of a thermonuclear event, it changes the result of the carbon dating. So I think that it's about time for us to look at our ancient history, because what if something similar happened in our past?
Gentlemen, what do you think? It's probably 10,000 years in the future is where it came from, right?
Well, I mean, if it's on Ancient Aliens, I mean, he just said it.
I mean, it's on there. It's got to be true.
It's
10,000 years?
Could
Italy?
Could
nuclear explosions?
All right. So assuming it isn't from a nuclear capable society 10,000 years ago or in the future, we do have a small paper trail on it, but an actually pretty good paper trail. So various letters have been found tracing ownership of the manuscript. And we're not going to examine whether every actual person actually had it for these exact dates or anything like that. We're going to give you the basics. The earliest guy known to own it was Emperor Rudolf II, who paid 600 gold ducats.
That's Holy Roman Emperor, King of Hungary and Croatia, King of Bohemia, and Archduke of Austria to you, sir. Yeah.
You stand in the presence of Daenerys Stormborn of House Targaryen, rightful heir to the Iron Throne. rightful queen of the Andals and the First Men, protector of the Seven Kingdoms, the mother of dragons, the Khaleesi of the Great Grass Sea, the Unburnt, the Breaker of Chains.
This is Jon Snow. He's king in the north.
That's right.
Damn.
He was a member of the House of Habsburg. He was also known to collect weird and wild stuff. Wonder what he would have paid for Seabot.
More than this two-bit operation is worth. I need to upgrade my life.
That's actually accurate.
That's really true.
Yeah, yeah, but no one wants you.
Yeah.
You're
junk.
So Rudolph was also known for not paying his debts. So he'd buy it from you, but not send you, you know, your PayPal account. So upon his death, the book was then given to Jacobus Horsicki, or Horsicki. There's a lot of C's and K's and whores in there. De Tepinus, the head of Rudolph's botanical
gardens. Did you notice how I got quiet there and just let you go ahead and take care of that one?
We have the names written out, but not phonetically, as part of the debt for Rudolph that he owed, Rudolph II. And then for the next 70 years or so, various people within various hard-to-pronounce names owned it until it disappeared again for 200 years. Now, in all likelihood, it was likely stored with the rest of the library of Collegio Romano, now the Pontifical Gregorian University during those years. But in 1903, the Society of Jesus,
which is what the Collegio Romano is now known as,
was short on money and decided to sell some of its holdings. So the sale took place, and in 1912, this cat named Wilfred Voynich acquired 30 of these manuscripts. And guess what? This was one of them.
We
there
finally have a name. And here's the thing. It took until now to give this thing a damn name?
1912. Well, not even then. I mean, he owned it. So, they're just like, Even the language, they call it Voynichese, the language, if it is an actual
language. Why would we have called it one of these other guys? Like why wouldn't it?
Because they're really hard to pronounce.
The Rudolph manuscript?
Yeah.
The Rudy Tooty wrote on calfskin. I don't know. There's way better names out there. I couldn't come up with one, but there's better ones. This guy.
Yeah, I don't think the Rudy Tooty really flies. No.
I like it.
He spent the next 7 years attempting to enter scholars and deciphering this thing while he worked to determine the origin of the manuscript. And guess what? People were like, at that time were like, yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not really interested in this.
So yeah, he spent the rest of his life trying to figure this thing out.
Guys, this is probably important. I don't know.
It's like if you're a mechanic or you're not a mechanic and you're trying to figure out your car.
Yeah.
And you obviously can't, but you're still going to try to figure it out. And no other actual mechanics will help you. That was the rest of his life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how to take this carburetor apart. I'm still going to try. But man, it'd be awesome if an actual mechanic would come help me.
Not interested.
Nope.
Sounds like that's my dating life pretty much currently. So.
But you know what? You're giving it the old college try yourself.
I have to do it myself because nobody else will show me.
Taking care of business every day. So in 1930, the manuscript was inherited after Wilfred's death by his widow, Ethel Voynich.
Little known fact, also the author of The Gadfly and daughter of mathematician George Boyle.
That's fantastic.
Who doesn't?
That's something to be proud of, right there.
George Boyle's life. I mean, come on now. She died in 60 and left the manuscript to her close friend Annie Nil. And in 61, Nil sold the book to an antique book dealer, Hans P. Kraus. I'm sure he didn't do anything nefarious during the war, and Kraus was unable to find a buyer and donated the manuscript to Yale University, where it sits today. It was back in 69 when it went there.
Haven't we given the Germans enough trouble on this show?
Nah, that's probably.
He was in America. There's no reason to take that out on him.
What do you guys think? Like, it's pretty interesting to have a book that is as old as it is, that has the pedigree that is traceable. I mean, what do you guys think?
So I'm just glad it's not the Pekraus book instead of the Voynich or whatever.
Voynich.
Voynich.
And with the P. Kraus papers.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's so hard for me to pronounce. But is that weird? Is it weird though?
It is weird because it's phonetic. So
well, no,
yeah, it's spelled how it sounds. No, I
mean, is it weird
you're a dick.
A book like this would be able to be traced like that, or is it because it's such a weird book, people just knew where it was all the time?
Yeah, it's hard to tell if some of those stories are made up on its origin as well as some of its pattern through life, right, going from place to place. That's kind of hard. So why would Voynich originally be interested in purchasing the book? Why would it be, donated to a private bookseller? That seems a little bit shady, but I mean, yeah.
Now he didn't just buy it. He bought all the manuscripts that were available,
30 of them,
which was over 30. And this just happened to be one of them.
Now but you're right though.
Yeah.
As far as the history goes, obviously it can't be validated. The history is traced through a series of letters. You know, it's one person's account of what happened. Rudolph owned it. We know that from someone saying it in a letter. And that's so it could be bullshit.
Just like America's history will in the future be traced through Trump's tweets, I think is the way we're going to explore our past and future.
Oh. It'll be huge.
Huge.
I just want to know. By the way, guys, I'm gonna jet because I gotta go read The Gadfly, but I want to know, has anyone traced the history of what clearly is a seminal work of literature?
Grab another Percy.
The Gadfly. All right, kids. So that's what we know about the manuscript so far. But after the break, we're gonna dive into what we don't know and what it says, which is the vast majority. Who wrote it? How were aliens involved? All right. Ooh. All that and more after the break on Hysteria 51. I think what we're going to do is just solve this for everyone.
Well, including reptilians with aliens?
Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it, so it's very high on pronunciation, too, so you can, learn how to speak.
And our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation, yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, if you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in and you're using it with, you get speech recognition and it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I have to go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long term, and it's something that it works, and we don't do long term stuff like this, and this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now. Get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today.
So, the guy said I had to apologize here. I unplugged Pecker's microphone for the second half because we all know he sucks. They added him back in, but it sounds like shit. Blame me, I feed off hate.
And we are back, Hysteria Nation. While we were gone, Joe went ahead, went to the restroom, and read the entire Voynich manuscript.
The break was 2.5 weeks. Luckily, his zipper was stuck, and it took him that long. So, yeah.
So you have it figured out, Joe?
Well, I have for a while, but I'm excited, John, for the big reveal at the end of this show when you're going to recite it in English.
We're not even going to wait. We've broken it down now. I've got my decoder ring here. Drink more Ovaltine? I want the crummy commercial. We're making fun of it. What does it say, John? What does this thing say?
The text of the manuscript is still, question mark, a mystery. It is tempting to assume that the text relates to the illustrations, but we don't know that for a fact.
Right.
There are wildly varying theories as to what it could
be. If you've got any of my textbooks, the illustrations in them have nothing to do with what's going on in the text. So God help the poor alien souls in the future that come to our Earth and find my textbook and use that to
assume what's in there. Yeah, yeah.
Why does every one of their leaders have a goatee, sunglasses, and a giant joint?
Nice.
They're really obsessed with anarchy. And Metallica. Yeah. Oh, that was mine. Sorry. All right.
Nice.
Here are a few theories that span the globe of theories as far as the Voynich manuscript goes. First, it is based on early discoveries and inventions by 13th century friar Roger Bacon, written.
No one can mess with fried bacon like that. That's
friar. But written in a very complicated code. So here's the deal.
That's highbrow Illinois comedy for you Floridians down there.
Yeah. I mean, that one didn't get me. That was pretty funny.
Us other Illinoisans weren't laughing either. Early 20th century philosopher William Romaine Newbold argued that Roger Bacon really had written the whole thing. And that when properly decoded, the manuscript proved that Bacon had used both telescopes and microscopes to anticipate modern germ theory.
What kind of germs was he looking at with a telescope?
It's a great question.
That's what I want to know.
Far away ones?
Yeah.
Really big ones.
Yes. That checks out. That works.
But one problem. Don't forget that the carbon dating of the manuscript placed it in the 15th century. So, you know, bacon being from the 13th century poses a small problem.
Unless someone found the bacon and just reheated it, meaning they found it and they just, you know, recopied it down.
Okay, you're making a joke. Unless my friend George Tsoukalos was correct about the carbon dating being wrong because of a nuclear
now,
explosion.
Is that up to 10,000
years?
And
it was actually 10,000-year-old vellum.
Or bacon's a time traveler.
What else, John? Hit me with one.
It's a fake language. Military cryptographer William F. Friedman. Not the Friedman you know from this show.
Not Stanton Friedman.
No relation. this Friedman is the real deal. He helped break Japan's purple cipher during World War II. He collaborated with his wife and fellow cryptographer Elizabeth for years in an attempt to decode the Voynich manuscript.
Yeah, that was just like in their spare time, this is all they did.
It's like most people do the New York Times crossword.
Yeah.
They did this. Ultimately,
Sudoku? Voynich.
Voynich. They concluded,
Tack, you want to get a real lady? Whip out some ciphers and see where, you know, see where they stand. That's the way it works.
I tried.
You
want to
come back to my place and see my cipher?
Do not take Brent's advice and whip out your cipher recklessly.
Hey, baby, you want to come see my Enigma machine? Oh.
Check out my decoder pin.
But you can decode the hell out of this.
No one knows.
Why am I wringing my hands like an evil genius?
Ultimately, they concluded that cracking the code was impossible, of course, since they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And that the quote, the Voynich manuscript was an early attempt to construct an artificial or universal language of the priori type.
Now, what's priori type mean? Do you know what that means?
Yeah, but I'm not going to tell you.
I just want to see if you know.
That checks out, right?
So here's one of my favorites. That the Voynich manuscript is a rare prayer book from the Cathars, not destroyed by the Inquisition and written in a pidgin version of a Germanic/Romance Creole.
Wow.
Yeah. This comes from Leo Levitov, proposed in his 1987 book, Solution of the Voynich Manuscript, a liturgical manual for the Endura Rite of the Cathari Heresy, A Cult of Isis.
One of my favorites to read while I'm doing my business on the pot.
Oh, God.
Like,
he doesn't even use the restroom.
A pigeon version of Germanic romance creel. Wasn't that the plot to the last, like, 50 Shades of Grey movie? I don't even know, man. That is crazy.
It had something to do with the last Transformers, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It makes more sense.
I thought that was the name of Emeril Lagasse's new restaurant.
That's a pigeon version of Germanic romance creel.
So try to follow me here. They're saying that the manuscript is a handbook for the Cather Rite of Endura. It's a thing they do, right? Written in a Flemish-based creole. He further claimed that Catharism was descended from the cult of Isis. Not what you're thinking of Isis, but the old Egyptian thing. However, Levitov's decipherment has been refuted on several grounds, not the least of which being unhistorical. Levitov had a poor grasp on the history of the Cathars, and his depiction of Endura as an elaborate suicide ritual is at odds with surviving documents describe it as simply a fast. Likewise, there is no known link between Catharism and Isis.
So what you're saying is that was BS, and but some people still buy into it.
That's what they want you to think.
Which is pretty much the, you know, the bread and butter of this show. BS.
Isn't that the show description on
We're not business. The Twisted 10 or you know, Living Podcariously or anything like that actually has some meat and potatoes.
It's almost as if you've been doing too much science.
Too much science? Is that possible?
You guys are going to lose listeners by being on this.
Not at all.
I don't know, like, there's all these people coming out of the room. Computer science, Gordon Rugg thinks the whole thing's a hoax, and there's nothing to decode. Physicist Andreas Schinner thinks it was written by an autistic monk who subconsciously followed a strange mathematical algorithm in his head.
There's a retired chemistry person named Edith Sherwood who thought 8-year-old Leonardo da Vinci wrote the thing.
And, then there's aliens.
Want natural, healthy-looking shine and voluminous curls and waves that make you look like you just stepped out of a salon? It's easy with Conair Jumbo and Super Jumbo Hot Rollers. These 12 ceramic flocked rollers heat up in just 85 seconds. And because they're infused with ceramic, they transfer heat evenly for big, bouncy, long-lasting curls. Twice the flocking of competitive products means more heat protection. Wire clips ensure a secure hold. Makes a great gift for yourself or someone special. Go to Conair.com for Jumbo and Super Jumbo Hot Rollers now.
Oh, the aliens one's great. They literally took remember how we talked about how some of the pages unfolded?
Yeah.
And had kind of like star map things. Zodiac, yeah. Things.
Smoking gun. Everyone knows aliens fold.
No human awesome. Could fold this way.
No human could stack books like this.
Stack aliens fold. It all comes together.
It all comes together. If you took one of those and then you took like a star chart that they found, like one star chart of like Alpha Centauri or something like that, and angled it the right way and then reversed it, it kind of looked like they matched up.
Yeah.
So proof positive.
And the person who found that out was Betty Hill. She came to and was like, I can see it's the Voynich manuscript. So
picturing her like standing at a window in the starship somewhere, like thoughtful, like pondering, where have I seen this guy?
Some guy's like,
by Jove, it's the Voynich man.
So, you know, if it is written by aliens, I'm a little bit disappointed because their animations, their drawings, the pictures of humans. They don't have very much skill in their artistry, obviously.
Yeah, it's not, right.
Doesn't do them any justice.
Yeah, this was not Alien Raphael.
Yeah. So the other thing that kind of sums this up, and Adam, I'm going to defer this to you a little bit, is you look at the stuff and the answer, whether this is like a basic question, was this text a language or a language that's been ciphered or something like that. There's a lot of people that say this is absolutely a language. What'd you find looking that up?
So something that's very interesting that I've studied in the past is stenography and burying code in text. You guys have alluded
Wait, time out. You might be the only person that's ever said very interesting in stenography in the same, the same sentence, but keep going.
No, I don't think he's the only person who's ever said that. I think he's the only person who said it on this show.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
or out loud in general.
Keep going. Keep going. Yeah,
no, it's all good. But you guys alluded to it earlier, like the second letter of every word, something like that. That's really where the meaning might be behind this article or by this book. But it may not be. So there's a theoretical physicist, Marcello Montanaro, something like that, out of University of Manchester that studied this. And what he specifically looked for was linguistic patterns. He doesn't care about what the words are. He cares about how they're used. And sure enough, he found out that the complexity of the structure of the words, if you want to call them that in this entire piece of literature, does prove that it is a complex piece of literature and not just a bunch of garbledygook somebody threw on a piece of paper. So it actually has substance behind it, and there's a real language there, according to this guy.
That's actually really interesting. And one of the things, like, I saw an interview talking about this, and they said, like, let's look at, like, English language. Like, the most used letter in the English language is E. So you're going to look at it, and you're going to say, okay, because of the amount of words and words, the way they're conjectured and put together and stuff like that, it's going to be a repeating pattern. And they found, like, the letters that were in this. Now, it's not English, but they coincide in the same way to say that this isn't just garbledygook put together, but it looks like it falls into these patterns that an actual language would be. And John, you can actually break it down a little bit further than that, I think.
Yeah, there's a universal law of language that was discovered. I mean, it's been in place for much longer than this, but was discovered in the early 20th century. It's called Zipf's Law. So Zipf's law states that a given
Z-I-P-F, I love that word.
Yeah, Zipf's law states that given a large sample of words used, the frequency of any word is inversely proportional to its rank in the frequency table. So that sounds a little confusing. Yeah. Let me say it in other words. The most frequent word will occur about twice as often as the second most frequent word, three times as often as a third most frequent word, and so on.
Yeah.
So if I is the most frequent word, the is the second most frequent word, I will happen twice as often as the, and so on and so on.
But here's the kicker to that, that blows my mind. That law is universal.
Yeah.
It's not something that I meant to do when I was making, you know, my Brent law, you know, my Brent language. It was just something that just happened. English and Germanic and all these things, it's
happens. Not known why, but it holds true for almost all languages, and it also holds true for the Voynich manuscript.
Meaning, this really, 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 really looks like a language, smells like a language, sounds like a language.
So
you can't say it is, but, you know, it's got all the characteristics.
It really, really, people that say it's nonsense, between what Adam just said, what you said, and then Zipf's law, I have a hard time believing nonsense.
Yeah, I don't think that it's nonsense. There's too much coincidence in patterns. It's not, it does have substance behind it. It's not accidental.
And the amazing thing about this is there's so much been going on with it recently. Did you guys see anything in the news about it lately, or what'd you guys find looking into it?
I have not. I didn't see anything in the news lately. I've just been watching a lot of YouTube stuff lately on it.
that's my favorite way to prep.
That's where I get all my news from, is YouTube and then my news feed on Facebook. That's how I get all my news.
It's all true, too.
So there's been numerous recent discoveries, and I say discoveries in quotes because about every 2 to 3 years there's a new discovery and a new translation.
2017 was a big one for this manuscript.
First one came in 2014. An expert in applied linguistics, his name was Professor Stephen Bax, published an article in which he claimed to have translated 10 words from the manuscript using techniques similar to those successful in translating Egyptian hieroglyphics. He claimed the manuscript to be a treatise on nature, which, I mean, that's not a far-fetched thing to say. We could say that just from looking at the pictures.
Yeah.
In a Near Eastern or Asian language. However, no further translation was made. Nothing. They couldn't get anything else out of him before his death in 2017.
Now, the thing about this was in 2014, and he came out with this, and people did not like it. They're like, no, screw this guy. Go to hell. Like, it's one of those things. A lot of people are working on it, and it's their baby, I think. And so if someone does come forward with stuff that's not easily repeatable to them, or they're trying to hide it until they bring it themselves, people like to poo-poo on it and shut it down.
Is there also a little bit within exactly that, like a little bit of like, people don't want it to just be like a farmer's almanac?
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. They want it to like be it
when someone tries to say this is actually more simple than you all.
One of the things is
so right.
One of the things is literally like people are like, I believe that these plants are the actual plants from the Garden of Eden, and I'm going to prove that. And you're laughing. That is literally one of the arguments that people make. They believe that this is like an angelic speak, or this is a godly speak, and it's above us, and it's divine, or it's from a previous civilization.
But think about it. We're doing an episode on it right now. As of this moment, it has all possibilities.
Yeah.
The possibilities are endless. Conjecture is so much fun. It could be anything from the Garden of Eden to aliens to an alternate universe to Nazis. I don't know. It has all possibilities. The moment it's translated, it is narrowed to, it's a farmer's almanac or whatever it is.
Yeah. It's one of those things where the story's better than the actual proof, or, you know,
the supposition.
The legend's better than the fact.
And I'm finding all of this conjecture very taxing personally. It's not fun at all.
Just in September, though, they made some news on this, didn't they, John?
Well, yeah. Well, sort of. There was news. So a television writer. So that starts out well. Nicholas Gibbs claimed to have found...
Podcaster? Well, piss on him. Like, what?
I don't go to television writers for my cipher translations. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean...
He said he decoded the manuscript as idiosyncratically abbreviated Latin. A medieval scholar...
You guys want to come over here and do some Latin?
Hear ye, hear ye.
Hey, oh.
That sounded to me that like a perfect Egyptian.
Actually, I was wanting to use someone who was from Pompeii but then moved to Spain at a young age.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed.
It's more in the, you got to flick the tongue when speaking.
That way you moved away from the hand ringing on that.
Yes, yes. One. To an untrained ear, it probably sounds like gibberish, just like to us when you talk that nonsense.
Yeah.
So, hey,
yeah.
Guys, I want to apologize for having Joe on with you guys. It's embarrassing right now.
So,
go on.
Not at all.
So Gibbs, our television writer, he was judged pretty harshly. Medieval scholars found his hypothesis to be not novel, quote unquote. His work was criticized as patching together already existing scholarly works.
I find it rather boorish.
And providing a highly speculative and incorrect translation. In fact, Lisa Fagan Davis, director of Medieval Academy of America, stated that Gibbs' decipherment, quote, doesn't result in Latin that makes sense, end quote.
So someone else is grasping at something like, here, I'm going to throw my name in the ring and I'm going to get people talking about me.
But at the beginning of the show, we teased that there has been a new development here in 2018.
Ooh, oh, yeah. Boy.
Oh,
stop teasing.
Buckle up, gentlemen.
From January of this year, just a mere 24 hours ago as we record, and just a few weeks ago,
whenever
we drop this, computing science professor Greg Kondrat of the University of Alberta says that they are decoding the Voynich manuscript using artificial intelligence.
Which makes sense.
Finally, use a computer, kids.
Yeah. Which they did in the past. They used the first...
What, the ENIAC?
No, it was... What did they call the first major
Skynet.
Computer? Big guy or big boy or something like something weird like that.
No, that was the bomb that they
dropped. That was a bomb. Yeah, that was a bomb.
And a little boy.
No, whatever.
But the first supercomputer they actually tried to use on this, I saw the thing, and it had...
Big Blue, right?
Nope, it wasn't called Big Blue.
Daryl? Was it Daryl?
Anyway... Anyway, they did try it, but
to how?
Like the 50s when with punch cards and you had to have radiation suits, you know, to be near it, you know.
Well, so. I've also read stuff about them using like some of the, like the big, when they were building out game theory machines in the 90s, trying to predict, you know, complex, large scale human behavior and looking for patterns. And I mean, it really is the predecessor to today's AI that John's talking about and some of the machine learning capabilities.
Sure. And that's where we got The Sims.
Yeah, right.
Well, thank God.
So how nice. They do it with this?
Well, they used 400 different language translations of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So they took that text, 400 different versions of it, different language translations, to identify the language used in the text of the Voynich manuscript.
And what was it?
The researchers' algorithms revealed that the manuscript is written in, of all things, Hebrew.
Okay.
They worked out the Voynich manuscript was created using alphagrams that use one phrase to define another. So they built an algorithm to unscramble the text. It turned out, this is a quote from the head researcher, Kondrak. It turned out that over 80% of the words were in a Hebrew dictionary, but we didn't know if they made sense together. The initial part of the text was then run through Google Translate.
What?
Yes. Google wins.
It came back with the following sentence. Quote, "She made recommendations to the priest, man of the house, and me and people."
What?
That was the first sentence. The full meaning of the text will need the involvement of historians of ancient Hebrew.
So that's just like one line that they gave us, but they're saying that they've decoded the whole thing.
Basically, they figured out it was Hebrew. Mm. They went to the local ancient Hebrew historians, like the ones they had access to, and they said, "No, we won't help you." So then they went to Google Translate.
Isn't that freaking crazy? Like, why is that always the, hey, so we have this ancient manuscript that we believe is Hebrew. Will you translate it? Nah, deuces, we're out. Not interested. How is that always the case?
I don't know.
Do you guys, what you're doing, like, when you're researching your top tens and stuff, do you run into that, too, where people just, like, it's a brick wall all the time with these crazy stories?
So far, no. We haven't had too many people that have given us a hard time.
Us, per se. I mean, just, like, we're looking at, like, the stories, and that seems to be the case. Hey,
I don't know if you've listened to our show very much, but we don't get that technical with the Twisted Ten. It doesn't get that deep.
Well, we do see that throughout history, whenever people are trying to come to a conclusion on some great mystery, inevitably when they first start to dig it out, and they think they've found something, they've found the tail of the pig, and they're trying to grab it, and there are literally experts there that could help them. The experts don't want to a piece of it for whatever reason, and that was proven right here. But now that it's gotten notoriety, now that it's been written in major news sources, there will be hundreds that will be more than willing to help them.
I used to work with a guy who he's a college professor now, but he had a degree in Christian apologetics, and now he's got his master's and doctorate and everything. He spoke Hebrew. That would be awesome. That would be awesome. Like, he would be one of those people that would actually jump at the chance to work with
and
something.
And that's the
like
hard
this.
Part, though, because you have to understand the syntax of ancient Hebrew, yes. And there's only so many folks that.
Yeah. And a lot of them are going to be in a biblical sense of one way or another, and then they don't want to touch it.
Well, and also, don't forget, and I am certainly, I'm not Jewish, so I'm certainly not going to understand the intricacies here. A lot of them are going to be Orthodox Jewish, which. Perhaps diving into this is not going to be something that they're going to feel.
Who knows? Because they don't know what it is. That's just
right.
To shut a door and say no like that is just crazy to me. So let's put it this. So, Tack,
yes.
You're looking at this. You're listening. You've studied. You've looked into it. You want to do this episode. What do you think? What do you think of this? What do you think it is? What drew you to it?
What drew me to it was the whole mystery behind all of it, you know, because nobody knew what it was or, you know, was it written by aliens? Was it written by ancient man? You know, nobody knew. And I thought that was quite fascinating, especially along with all the illustrations all through it. And, you know, I've recently seen some people that have been trying to translate it. And I think it's fascinating. It kind of reminds me a little bit of, what is that one book? Like the Devil's Bible or Devil's Book or whatever. What's that other book?
The Necronomicon?
No.
Evil Dead.
You know what I'm talking. I know one of you has to know.
John Goforth's diary.
Who could it possibly be? Was it? Oh, I don't know. Satan. Yeah.
Oh, maybe you guys don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know. It's like this book with like it's some satanic book or something. I don't know. It's like huge. But anyway,
we don't hang out at the same parties as you do, I guess.
We know how to party here in Florida.
Yeah,
let me tell you.
So.
Love a love a jump jump.
I don't know. Just the whole mystery behind it is fascinating, and I'm interested in history too. So this coming from like the 15th century,
right?
Is kind of
right.
It's fascinating.
Joe, what is it?
All right, bear with me for 1 second. Why is he taking his shirt off? We find all of these like ancient things by different writers. You know, you can go back and you look at, you know, who's considered so pivotal. you look at, you know, people talking about Shakespeare, and he literally directed the history of the English language with the way that he wrote. But no one ever talks about anybody, like, were there no pranksters in, like, the history, in, like, ancient history? Like, I'm picturing the three of us sitting around in a room and, like, let's get some really nice paper.
Right.
And, like, write just some crazy stuff that... and bind it really nice and just laughing.
So
and,
like, here's the thing. I actually I watched the thing and they actually talked about that. Like, this could be an absolute hoax where someone did it not to be like, ha ha, for money. So, like, they figured out that it wouldn't take years. If they had, like, three people working to make it look real, they could have pumped it out in a few weeks and then sold it as, like, this lost manuscript. And at the time, I guess, you know, a couple hundred years ago or whatever, when stuff was going on, now maybe not now in 1400, but stuff like that sold like crazy. So it could have actually been, they said, a forgery, or if you want to call it a forgery, yeah. That's the wrong word, but a hoax.
And that could be, I still prefer to believe that it's more like the, like, 1412 version of, like, Seth Rogen and James Franklin.
Like, nice. I guess
they would have had a couch, sitting around on the bench, laughing it up, like, oh, write this word 17 times. Like, yes, this is going to be awesome.
Great job.
A lot of people think this is where we also get the Holy Bible, too. Also, same kind of thing. Not saying who believes that, but I'm just saying some people believe that.
So, Joe, is that your walkaway opinion?
That's it. I'm done. This is why it's not there. I mean, even the thing, you know, the most recent development where they're using machine learning to train itself on all these different ways to find patterns. I mean, still think about it, guys. Like, they're finding, like, an 80% match. If you think about that from a linguistic standpoint, that's not very compelling to me, even though it's more compelling than anybody else seems to have gotten. Like, there's got to be a 100% match for this thing to make sense.
Well, maybe it's also because of it's the dialect that they're getting wrong. True. You know, so I don't know. There's a lot of...
There could be some syntax.
I'm with you on that. Like, could it be a hoax? Absolutely. Do I think it was? Man, I don't know. Like I said, the drawings could be anything. I actually think it's probably some sort of probably religious or royal or something, information decree, whatever you want to call it. It's probably something that they wanted to hide. They did a cipher and we just haven't got there yet. I don't think that it's a hoax. But it could be. And the biggest thing that keeps me from the hoax is what John talked about with the, you know, it falling in with the laws of language. So that's a big one for me. So I'm kind of on that fence. That's what I think. Adam, what do you think?
I'm going to tangent. I'm going to answer that by giving you a tangent a little bit. If you listen to our show, I do that a lot, too. Have you guys ever seen the movie Stigmata?
Yes.
Sure.
Older, like late 90s, I think, early 2000s, maybe. Well, at the end of the Stigmata movie, they educate the audience by telling you about the last writings, supposedly the last writings of Jesus, which is, I think, the Gospel of Thomas or something like that. And that the Catholic Church, to the date of the airing of that movie, still has not adopted those writings as authentic, even though they were, you know, carbon dated at the same era.
Right.
They were using the same language. They were using this. Everything's exactly the same. Yet the Catholic Church has its own agenda to not recognize that gospel. The same could be said for this. So, if there actually is some underlying meaning behind it, perhaps those linguists out there that do understand the translations don't want to reveal the contents of it because of some other agenda that they're trying to somehow shape culture. Now, granted, this particular book may have nothing to do with shaping culture, but it may have some other hidden agenda in it, or it's aliens, one or the other.
Well, I mean, look at how many, not just that, like they don't accept that as from... you know, as from Jesus, but how many books of the Bible that aren't included in the Bible that we look at right now?
Yeah, the apocryphals.
I forget how many
Gospels. They find more of them all the time.
Exactly.
And the interesting thing is, you know, it's a little bit of a misnomer that they say that they don't believe that they're real or whatever. Like, there is generally a lot within, like, biblical scholarships. Like, by the way, I am, you know, very, like, do a lot of research in this and stuff. I minored in it in college and everything, but like,
nice.
It's not necessarily that they don't believe that there's legitimacy to them. They use them in contextual ways of looking at, like, how do we map out and figure out
what was the first century like in Israel, and what was going on, and what were people thinking of Jesus, of this guy that turned into the Christian religion.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the agenda. I mean, Adam, it's exactly what you said. Like, that's such an interesting point of view to me. I hadn't really thought about that way of like, is there something else there that it's like, no, we're not going to pursue this because it falls outside of sort of the world that we've all constructed.
Right. John.
All right. Buckle up, kids. I have a different perspective on this one. And, I'm going to go a little, I'm going to take a little left turn. Normally you could say that I'm a non-believer in a lot of our episodes. I think I'm more of a believer in this one.
Spill it, Mysterio.
I think it's 100% a coded, if you want to use the term Farmer's Almanac, something like that. And I think that we're going to uncode it relatively soon, whether it's the current folks in Alberta or if they very well could be wrong. Because the people in 2017
are going to knock it out.
They're going to knock it out.
Yeah.
Right. If it's not this version, the people in 2019 or the people in 2020, somebody's going to figure it out pretty soon. But once we uncode it, it's going to simply be or appear to be something like that. The flora, the fauna, the astronomical. But I think hidden inside of that is something even more. And I honestly believe, because why take this much time and why take this much effort to make this so difficult? I think inside of it is, I don't know if it's a treasure map. I don't know if it's
buried in
Oak Island.
In Oak Island.
Yeah. This thing and
could it be? Could it be? No, but a
1400s manuscript?
I don't know if it's a treasure map. I don't know if it's a more interesting story. But so often there are more interesting tales inside of words. Whether you take
the, decipher it, then we've got to decipher it.
Then we have to decipher it.
Yeah.
And that's what I believe.
That's interesting. I believe if we're saying that it absolutely is language and it's going to be deciphered, then you're right. There is a hell of a lot of security put into whatever it is. That's our alien thoughts, guys. Like, I don't know. Let us know what you guys think at home. How can they do that, John?
Hop on Hysteria Nation. Go to Facebook. Search Hysteria Nation. Join the conversation.
That's right. And also, go to Facebook.com/Hysteria51Pod. You can find all the episodes there. We're hopping on things. Hop on Twitter @Hysteria51Pod. Don't forget to hop on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. John, let's do a contest.
I think it's a great idea.
Tell us about it.
We have a new sticker contest. If you remember, if you're a listener of this show, our last sticker contest was a smashing success. You had to go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review, and say somewhere in the context of said review, Brent was an ugly pigeon.
That's right.
And you did so in droves. We want you to do that again, but that is no longer the secret code. No, it will not help you to say that Brent is an ugly pigeon. No.
Might just make you feel good.
It might. You can. You're welcome to. All you have to do is get on there, leave us 5 stars, leave us a review, and use the terms. Don't just say this. Say whatever you want to say about the show, but somewhere in that review, say simply, I love CBOT.
And then let us know. Let us know that you said that. You can send us a screenshot on Hysteria Nation. Would be great. We're going
to
send you some.
You can email it to us, too,
love.
But we prefer it on Hysteria Nation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Throw it on there and let everyone know that you're superior. That's the way I like it. We're going to send you some sticker love. It's that easy. Also, if you want to hear your voice on the show, 773-669-7277. That's our voicemail line. Again, 773-669-7277. If you forget any of this stuff, just go to hysteria51.com. Guys, Twisted 10, thank you so much for being on. How can we find you? How can our listeners now subscribe to you, listen to the show, let you know that they're now raving lunatic fans?
Well, you can find us anywhere podcasts are heard. You can hear us on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play Music, all that stuff. Anywhere you can hear Hysteria 51, you can also hear the Twisted 10 as well.
Yeah, be sure to check out John and Brent's episode too. They hosted, guest hosted an episode and blew it out of the fucking water. That's
top
for damn sure. It was a good show.
Conspiracies, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It was a great show.
Where I had one job to let you guys, or you guys had one job to say the number, and I kept stealing your job because that's how much I paid.
Indeed.
You guys got any fun episodes coming up or anything? What's new?
Well,
what's going on?
Ironically, we're about to release, and I know this has been a long time coming, and you guys prepared a really awesome clip for us to use as well, but you made us the introduction to the Flat Earth guys, to John and Jaron and
David Weiss.
Help me out with this. Yeah. David. Thank you, David and Jaron. And we did a rebuttal episode, basically. So they gave us 10 challenges on their Twisted 10, and we didn't take any of them because they were all ludicrous. Basically, what we did is we allowed our friend, fellow podcasters like you guys, as well as Dan Cummins from Time Suck, and then a few others around, sent us clips of their responses to these Flat Earth guys. So
very nice.
That will be releasing next week. So probably about the time listeners,
I know you guys
this,
were rushed when you had them on there, but yeah, it was one of those things where, it was like, they were saying ludicrous. You're like, all right, that's your opinion. Next question.
Yeah, basically.
So I was like, oh, yes. Them. So that's all right. So guys, thanks a ton for being on. Again, Joe Peck, we find you in studio, kissing up to C-Bot, letting you in the door.
Reading the gadfly.
It's always
you have
pleasure.
Been upgraded, though. I mean, the fact that Brent is letting you stay in the basement versus in the bushes, I'm impressed.
That's true. Well, we had to feed the microphone through the window, and one of them got pinched, and I'm not going to have to buy another one, so we're going to let him in the house. That's the way it goes. Then I have to edit out all the traffic noises from behind him and the rustling. Lots of rustling. So with that said, I've been Brent.
I've been Tack.
I've been Adam.
I've been Voynich.
I've been John.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite. Join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth hand joint.